Boogity boogity boogity, welcome to the lap down, everyone. We are post CODA Circuit of the Americas. I am your host, Greg Farmer, and with me tonight is Jamie Tyler, who is post surgery. Glad you are doing well, sir. Valentino and Ryan. As always, a special shout out to our band, The Alkali Project, for writing our intro song. Be sure to check out their new album, The Blood World, on Spotify. Before we start, guys, I just want to say something real quick. I just want to everyone here at the Lap Down, we send our thoughts and prayers to the people of Baltimore, Maryland. As you know, the whole country has heard, and probably around the world, the Francis Scott Key Bridge was collapsed after it was hit by a cargo ship the other night. And still haven't really had many updates on that as far as casualties or whatnot, but we just want to send our love and our prayers to our friends up in Baltimore. But with that, guys, we had a really big weekend in racing. Saturday night, we had the F1 Grand Prix of Australia, and Max Verstappen was chasing history, trying to win his 10th race in a row and become what would you say a couple weeks ago, Ryan? He was trying to become the first driver to have a perfect race like 3 weeks in a row, or three or four races in a row.
Yeah, it's three perfect races in a row.
Yeah. So, that did not come to fruition, as on lap four, he lost his brakes and DNF'd from the race, and it allowed Carlos Sainz and Team Ferrari to take the victory in Australia. I don't know how much you guys are with Formula One. I know Tyler's kind of the Formula One expert of the group, but is this just a fluke by Red Bull with maybe just a one bad race, or could this be maybe Red Bull starting to become more human and not immortal?
Well, I'm going to add on to that, since I am a little bit like an F1. I've been looking into it. I've been watching a lot of stuff on it. I've been reading up. Max says the cars haven't been perfect. It's just finally the cars start to show its weaknesses. No matter what you do, is immortal. You're going to break down. It's bound to happen. And with Max Verstappen, everybody says he's immortal. Nothing can happen to him. We proved Saturday night or Sunday morning that he is mortal. It happened. I don't think it's going to be like a stretch of where he's going to fall off. I don't think he's going to do that. But I do see coming down the road a lot of reliability issues for Honda engines, and especially Red Bull and the RB. Because the RB, which has the same power unit as the main Red Bull thing, had engine issues in Jeddah. So I could be down the road that Red Bull, they're just hiding their problems. They're getting them fixed before they cause a problem. That's why they haven't had issues.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I say that is because, I mean, you know, Max Verstappen has won 19 out of 21 races now, if you count Australia. So it was, you know, we rarely ever see him make a mistake, some sort of part failure.
It's because, actually, I can tell you right now, it's also part favoritism. They play favoritism to Max over Checo. They want Max to have issues, so they take all the good parts off of Checo's car and put them on Max's car. That's why you see Checo not doing as well and not being as fast. His car is actually legitimately not as fast as Max's car. It's been proven. You can see his telemetry. His car doesn't drive like Max's.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's been
anybody got?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say if anyone's got any other thoughts.
Yeah, it's been a thing with F1 for a long time, though. I mean, Lewis Hamilton's cars were always driving way better than whoever his Mercedes teammate was that year.
Nico Hull. No, it was back and forth with Nico Rosberg, but it was after
like literally a decade ago now that Nico Rosberg was his teammate?
Really? Wow. It really, yeah, it is. Right? You're right.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, that was a literal decade ago when those two were teammates, but a lot of his other teammates after that just never had cars that really drove like Max's. And
Jamie or Valentino?
One other thing I want to point out is that he was also one race away from tying his own personal record of 10 wins in a row, which is a F1 record as well. Yeah, so he was one race away from tying that. The guy who broke that 10-race win streak last year, Carlos Sainz.
I think I wanted to see some history, and it was foiled in the first 5 laps, and I turned the dang TV off.
Yeah, I was asleep.
Really? Honestly, it was a better race because Max wasn't winning, honestly.
I don't care about better racing. I wanted records to be broke.
Sounds like a Jimmy.
The thing is that brings me into something. I read something where they say like a certain number is a number that a driver can reach but cannot get past. If you look at like Dale Earnhardt, Richard Petty, and Jimmy Johnson, and if you throw in Lewis Hamilton, all 4 of them have won 7 championships.
Yep. Don't forget Mike Dixon's short of that number too over in IndyCar too.
Right, so they can't get past that number. This is 2 seasons in a row that Max Verstappen has won 9 races in a row, but cannot get that 10th one.
No, he got the 10 last year.
He got the 10th one last year.
Yeah, he was one race away from tying his record.
That's what I meant, like 10 in a row. Yeah. This is the second season in a row that he could not get to 10 in a row, and it was broken up by the same driver.
He did make it to 10. He was going for 11 when he lost to Sainz last year.
Oh, okay.
That's what we were saying. Yep.
I bet. I follow F1, but I don't follow it like as much as other people do. But yeah, I mean, you know, Carlos Sainz is, you know, obviously like the driver that's got Max Verstappen's number, it seems like.
Which seems weird. He's actually not. He's the number 2 at that team, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah,
that is a fact.
Yeah, Charles Leclerc is supposed to be the number 1 driver. And if you go to next year, Lewis Hamilton's going over to Ferrari. So would that make Lewis Hamilton the number 1 and Charles Leclerc number 2?
Are they maybe putting that number 16
almost automatically,
the number 1 car at the team?
All right, so shifting gears literally and figuratively – let's come back to America. NASCAR had their triple header weekend at Circuit of the Americas, which is a track that Formula One will visit later on this year. Trucks and Xfinity had a double header on Saturday. So we're going to start with the truck race. Connor Zilich, who made his truck series debut on Saturday, started on the pole. He beat the field by, I think, 0.8 of a second in qualifying.
Yep.
And what was I going to say?
That impressed the hell out of me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's also
they
won 2 big races in sports cars already this year. He won the Rolex 24 and Mobile 1 12 hours of Sebring.
Oh, he won Sebring too?
Yeah, he won Sebring as well.
Yep.
Dude, the kid's insane.
And he's only 17 years old too.
Yep.
Think about that.
So he's the American prodigy of Max Verstappen, if you think about it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, he runs everything from Trans Ams to the Le Mans and all that good stuff. And now he's running he runs the ARCA series. He made his trucks debut. He will also be making his Xfinity series debut at Watkins Glen for Dale Jr. in the 88.
Yep, I do remember that.
Later also, in the summer. Sorry to butt in here, but he also raced in the same day that he raced the truck race at Circuit of the Americas. Later that night, he was racing at Five Flags Speedway in the ARCA series over in Pensacola, Florida.
Yep.
So, yeah, he makes his way around.
Yep. So,
because he has a private jet, or he helicoptered, I think, right?
I don't know. All I know is I saw footage of him in Pensacola.
Pensacola.
Only a couple hours after.
Pensacola is one of my favorite Five Flags is one of my favorite speedways.
Yep. Sorry.
So he started on the step in there. No, you're good. He started on the pole, and on the initial green flag, it's almost as if his controller disconnected, and he completely blew turn one. And went off into the gray area, and he actually was on Door Bumper Clear earlier this week and said that he flat spotted the tire so bad that he actually had a flat, and it drugged the sway bar across the track, and it broke his sway bar. And so he had to come in and pit and went a lap down. He got his lap back, got back up to the top five, and then had a course-cutting penalty, and then had to do a drive-through, drove back up to the top five, and then got spun, drove back up to the top five again, and at the end of the day, he ended up finishing fourth, which is exactly where he finished in the ARCA race later on that night, too.
Dude, the fact that you can tell how good he is by just diving to that many. That's Dale Earnhardt shit right there.
Oh, yeah. They said on Dale Jr. Download earlier today, or it was either Dale Jr. Download or Actions Detrimental, that he had 57 green flag passes past other trucks through that entire race from start to finish. Yep. I'm dead serious. Yes.
Honestly, I'm kind of surprised it's that low, but.
Mm-hmm. But the big story coming out of the truck race was Mr. Marco Andretti, with about two or three laps to go. He went into one of the turns. I can't remember which one it was.
Well,
turn six.
Yeah.
And it seemed like he just downshifted a little too hard and wheel hopped the crud out of the back of his truck and literally broke the rear end housing, and the whole rear end housing fell or came off of his truck. And I can only think of one other time I've seen something similar to that, which was Casey Mears at Sonoma a few years ago. Or, I mean, if you count Ryan Newman at Daytona back in 2003 when he was flipping across the front stretch. But I've never seen a rear end housing come out of a truck like that, just under braking. Jamie, do you have any thoughts on, like, could that be, like, just a bad part, did a weld break, or like, what do you think happened there?
When you get the Dollar Tree version or the Harbor Freight version of tools, you get those kind of expectations. But no, to be honest, I'm no mechanic by any means. But I imagine that there is loads and loads of different PMCS is going on, personal checks and services on the truck, making sure everything is tight, making sure everything is the way it needs to be. And the only thing I can say is somebody didn't do their job. Somebody didn't check the most important thing, which is keeping that whole thing connected to the truck. And me personally, I haven't seen it, and I know that it has happened in the past. I just may not have remembered it or caught it while it was happening live in race. But it was a bad time for me because I was showing a buddy what the truck series was about, racing at a road course, because Jack Hawksworth was driving in it because my buddy was an IndyCar. And, man, I did not hear the end of it for the entire night. He was like, you going to tell me that this is where – guys are coming up into the leagues, and you got trucks that can't even stay together? Get out of here.
it literally, like, threw me off guard because I was able to catch, like, kind of the end of that race. And Ryan posted in our group chat hoping that one of the Fox cameras had caught a replay of it. And so I thought about that message earlier today, and on my lunch break while I was at work, I went on YouTube and looked up that camera angle. That rear end housing came out with such force that it literally almost flipped his truck over. Like, he almost went upside down going into that turn.
That means he must have, like, That must have been like he either he might have actually misshipped, like how hard he did. Because if you're hold on, I don't remember what turn. Let me look at it real quick.
It's the turn heading onto the long back straightaway, right?
It's turn 11.
Turn 11.
So coming down that hill, he might have misshift, but going downhill, a 3,800-pound truck, and you misshift, that drive shaft's coming out.
Well, see,
the drive shaft probably dislodged the fucking rear end.
Honestly, he just hit the brakes really extremely hard, and that thing just locked up and actually grabbed the ground real good and just shot it out the back. Well, I've seen it happen before, like, different cars, but not like.
So does it have anything to do with, like, that hill that they go up and then they go down that hill? Could it be that the truck is just bottoming out and smacking like that peak part of the hill, which is then causing Ryan shaking his head like a bobblehead? I assume that's exactly what it is.
I kind of agree with Ryan there, like shaking his head.
Well, when I was listening to Dale Jr. Download earlier today, he was talking about a similar experience that he had when he ran Watkins Glen the very first time back in 97. And he said that most of the drivers who downshift, they hardly use the brakes at all until they almost get to the apex of the corner. They use something called engine braking, which is they slow down, they get off the gas, and then they start downshifting, and then they just listen to the RPMs. And then downshift into the next gear. So what he was thinking it could have been was he went to go downshift into second or first, but his RPMs were not where they needed to be. So he downshifted where he thought he was good, and the truck just started wheel hopping real bad, and something like a weld broke, and it literally just ripped the whole rear end out of the truck.
Yeah, because I think something similar to that happened to Buemi and the Grand Prix, Chinese Grand Prix. Like he came down into the corner and he hit the brakes real hard and his front two tires just blew off the car.
Yep, 2010 Chinese Grand Prix. Yep.
But one of the most, like, obviously different.
One of the most famous F1 memes ever. What happens when I press this button?
Very bizarre because it wasn't the heaviest braking zone on the track, you know, but very concerning for safety measures for the fans. You know, it's always a safety thing for NASCAR. So that's very concerning.
Well, see, I was listening to Dale Jr. and Denny Hamlin and stuff, and they both pretty much said the same thing. It's like the cameras showed what looked like just one tire rolling across the track. And then they pan the camera up and you see it's like the whole rear end housing, and just everyone was just shocked.
Like
completely came out of the truck. But Ryan, I know you've been waiting to talk. So what are your thoughts, buddy?
So,
how you doing, buddy?
So yeah, when I first got home and I was talking to my dad about this incident, he actually told me about a time when he had the exact same thing happen to him in his police cruiser a long time ago. And, he mentioned that it was related to when he went up a massive hill. That's when it happened to him in his actual police cruiser, so on a regular public road.
I mean, it makes sense.
So, it definitely...
Was he chasing somebody?
Huh?
Was he chasing somebody?
I'd have to ask him more specifically. I didn't ask about that, but I was more just trying to figure out, like, what could have caused that, but, yeah.
That's an episode of Cops I want to check out.
But, he was asking me, like, oh, were they going up a big hill when it happened or something? And it's like, yeah, Coda has a lot of ups and downs.
I mean, if you shift while going uphill, that, like I said, 3,800-pound truck.
Yeah.
The weight adjustment, it makes a lot of sense.
Yep. So needless to say.
Oh, speaking of, they did not choose to finalize the 304 thing, if you guys wanted to add on to that.
Yep.
Needless to say, Andretti finished 31st with suspension issues.
Suspension issues.
Hey, at least
that's more than suspension issues.
that's a drivetrain issue right there.
Man, that man would be walking around the track and they'd be like, "You ain't got no rear, son."
But
I don't want rears flat, but still.
At the end of the day, Corey Heim ended up getting the win in the truck race. And then later on in the day, we had the Xfinity Series race. I can't remember for the life of me who started on the pole in the Xfinity Series race.
It might have been one of the Gibbs guys.
No, Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson.
Yeah, Larson was on pole for Xfinity.
It was supposed to be Larson. Oh, was he?
Keyword, yeah, it was supposed to be Larson, but he had to go to the rear of the field. So then it was SVG and Gibbs.
Yep. So Kyle Larson started on the pole, but as Jamie said, had to go to the rear of the field for unapproved adjustments. The Xfinity race was decent, but it got real exciting there at the end when SVG and Austin Hill started beating the crap out of each other on the track. And so basically what happened is Austin Hill moved SVG to take the lead. And then a couple corners later, SVG returned the favor and got them both out of the groove. He hit Austin Hill so hard that he caved in the front end of his car, if that says anything. And it actually allowed Kyle Larson, who was sitting in third on fresher tires, to take the lead and win the race. And he only led one lap of that race, and it was the final lap. But the big shocker that came to everybody was SVG was P2 at the checkered flag, but he ended up getting a 30-second time penalty for cutting the course in the S's and ended up being relegated to a 27th or 28th place finish. But what everyone was talking about was after the race, Austin Hill was on the pit road doing his post-race interview, calling the guys over at College Racing a bunch of sissies, and he didn't like the move that SVG put on him, and you know, going back to the Dale Jr. Download and all that stuff. It seems like Austin Hill can dish it, but can't take it.
Yeah, that's what everybody's saying.
He doesn't like the taste of his own medicine.
Yep. So could this possibly be maybe a rivalry brewing between SVG and Austin Hill, or is this maybe more just of a one-off thing because it was the heat of the moment type deal, Jamie?
I don't know if it's necessarily like a rivalry between them two specifically. I'm more thinking it's going to be more of an RCR
versus
colleague. Yeah, I think it's going to spark more of a battle of between the two teams rather than the two people, because from the things I've looked at, it seemed like after a race, like after they got away from the media, SVG and Austin Hill both talked it out like men to each other, and there were no fists to fly in or tempers going at each other. They discussed it like grown adults. So I don't think there's really a rivalry as like a person-to-person, unless for some reason they get into each other like consistently throughout the season, which these things tend to happen. It seems like once you have one type of on-track issue, they're like magnets to each other. So that's always going to be fun to watch, but I think it's going to be more of a RCR versus colleague rivalry.
I can see that. Tyler, what do you got?
I actually, back on the incident, I think it was literally like, I agree with you by saying Austin Hill can't condition but can't take it. I 100% agree with it. He sounds like Joey Logano from like 4 or 5 years ago.
It sounds like Joey Logano now, honestly.
He's being pardon my language on the podcast. I think Austin Hill's being a little bitch that SVG wanted to move away. It's racing. It's called bumping. Haven't you heard of the term Robin's racing?
And bump and run.
Yep.
I mean, Austin Hill did that to him, and then he returned the favor. So, I mean, you know.
Karma's a bitch.
I honestly don't think Austin Hill would have lasted a day in the old NASCAR days with Terry Lapone and Dale Earnhardt, to be honest.
Neither with Joey Logano.
No. Valentino, what you got, man?
I think that Austin Hill is always bumping everybody and grinding everybody, you know. He's known to be giving everybody a little bit of a push or a little bit too hard of a, you know, he's just being a little too rough all the time. And I think that he needs to learn how to just deal with taking some, because he, you know, gives it out like it's cakes, hot cakes.
So he's the Ross Chastain of the Xfinity series.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think that he. I don't think there's going to be much of a rivalry going on. I think that he's just gonna let it go and move on next week. If they bump into each other again, I don't think I see that he's going to be racing much. What's his face? The other
SVG.
Yeah, SVG. He's not going to be racing very much, I don't think, right? He's not full-time this season?
He is.
Yeah, he's
no, SVG is full-time.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got a mistake.
It's copies.
Yeah, so maybe they will run into each other, but I just don't think SVG is good.
If I'm not mistaken, minus Coda's finish, doesn't SVG have top tens in every single Xfinity Series race this year?
I don't believe so.
No, Daytona, he did. He got wrecked out of Daytona.
He was in multiple wrecks at Daytona, but it seemed like he finished the race. I want to say he was at least top 15. He's learned.
Daytona.
Yeah, he's learning, and I can't remember who said. I think Brett Griffin or Freddie Kraft said it on DBC. He said, he comes from Australian V8 supercars, and he said, over there, or if you even throw in F1, you can't really bump somebody, or else they'll give you a penalty for it and stuff. He's like, coming to NASCAR, this is something completely new, because now I can use the bumper however I want it, and move these guys out of the way in order to get a win. And he said that he thought he was just, doing what he was taught, because he said basically Austin Hill taught him how to do the bump and run two corners prior than when he did at Austin Hill.
Oh, yeah, because he definitely used that bumper. That thing was bent in, huh?
Mm-hmm. Ryan, what are your thoughts?
Here. Yeah, I will argue one thing here. I don't know how to judge the severity of a bump or whatnot, but you got to learn how to use the bumper without breaking your own car. And usually I would grade that as a way to tell that, okay, maybe he did shove Austin Hill significantly harder than Hill shoved him, considering Hill's car was close to undamaged when Hill gave the bumper to Shane Van Gisbergen, but then when Shane gave the bumper back, he completely destroyed the front end of his car.
To be fair, I'm actually going to probably put Shane better than Dell if you think about it. He probably didn't know how hard he had to hit him.
Well, yeah, and that's where I'm not surprised that he did it, but that's one of those things where if you're trying to grade, the severity of a bump.
Is that Ben? Is that Ben that destroyed it, or is that Danny?
That's Rumble.
Well, it almost kind of reminded me of Byron versus Kyle Busch at Watkins Glen a couple of years ago, where Kyle Busch got into Byron and Byron didn't like it, so he went to go try to wreck Kyle Busch and ended up just destroying his car completely.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. I think he got a little bit frustrated that he got moved out of the way.
But I'm wondering if that might be part of what Hill was so upset about when he went and complained afterwards, was that, well, I got hit a whole lot harder than I hit him, even though it just comes out.
But the thing is nobody got wrecked though. They all stayed on the track and nobody spun out and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you guys have seen the picture that's been floating around social media that someone caught from the grandstands, but coming to the checkered flag, Yes, Austin Hill tried to just straight up right rear SVG coming to the checkered flag. They caught him mid-picture. His car was turned completely left in the SVG's right rear. And had he done that, that would have been a big-ass no-no, and I would have lost even more respect for Austin Hill than what I have for him now. I don't care if it's at an oval or a road course. You don't right rear anybody.
No matter what even if you're pissed off at them, you don't right rear people. No.
I like your choice of words. When you said that is a big no-no. Referencing, that's how we typically talk to little kids. And that is exactly what Austin Hill has been acting like. And that little comment, they're being a bunch of sissies and he hit me harder than I was hitting him. that's equivalent to my 3-year old talking about her little brother is smacking him or smacking her.
Yeah.
That is equivalent to that. So stop acting like a kid. You're in the limelight in the Xfinity series. You got to grow up a lot more if you think you can take that mentality into the Cup series and think that people are just going to let you run them the way that you're running and not get a receipt coming.
You'll be a damn fighting at the end.
Yeah. Oh, do you guys remember when he sucker punched Myatt Snyder at Martinsville a couple of years ago?
Yeah. Well, he's fighting. He's frustrated with everybody, it seems like.
Yep. I love me a good fight, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, so going into Sunday, the Cup race, the Echo Park Grand Prix, William Byron started on the pole and had what I guess you would call a dominating performance. He led the most laps out of anybody and ended up getting the win. The second place car, Christopher Bell, track actually after the final set of pit stops was 12 to 13 seconds back and actually tracked down Byron to finish within 0.6 of a second. Ty Gibbs finished third, and Alex Bowman, who started 17th, finished fourth. But it was the first caution-free race minus stage breaks since Road America 2022. So we actually got to see the race play out naturally.
Didn't the Richmond races 2023 or the later race in 2022 go caution free as well, aside from the stages?
Out of all the stats that I've seen, they said that the last caution free race minus stage breaks was Road America 2022.
Wouldn't I thought Indy Rojo went caution free last year?
No caution. It had one caution very early.
Yes,
Joey Logano or someone went spinning early.
So let me rephrase. It was the first race that had no natural cautions for incidents or debris or whatever since Road America 2022. But, you know, we got to see it play out naturally and all that stuff. But one of my questions to you guys is, obviously, we know that Christopher Bell had a faster car. He was on 4-lap fresher tires than everybody. Should Ty Gibbs have just let Christopher Bell go in order to catch Byron to have a Gibbs car win the race? Jamie?
No, because it's all about you're running your race. Yes, you're a part of a team, but at the same time, you are trying to have as good as a finish as you can possibly do. At that given point, it is the last 10 laps of a race. Maybe it's just my line of thinking. Team or no team, I'm trying to get the absolute best finish that I can have. And if it's my teammate behind me, I'm going to try and keep him behind me as much as I possibly can. Now, obviously, I'm not going to do it in a disrespectful way. I'm not going to purposely throw my car in front of him when he has the lean or something like that. I'm not going to try to damage the car or nothing like that, but I'm still going to race hard, and I wouldn't expect anything less than any of my counterparts if it was me.
What about you, Tyler?
I honestly don't think the idea, that's an F1 thing, because it's not a... I'd say keep that in F1. No team thing. It's every man. They may be a team, but it's every man for himself. That's how they should do it. You should race to finish wherever you want to finish, instead of having somebody else tell you, "Hey, you're going to finish here."
I will make one caveat to that, though. I could see a situation where Ty Gibbs makes the decision to back off and let Bell go in hopes that will then pay it forward. If they're in the exact same situation, but Gibbs is the faster car next time. But I want that call to be coming from Ty Gibbs. I don't want it to be someone on the radio telling Gibbs, you got to slow down.
Can I add on to that?
Yeah, go right ahead.
What I was going to say to that is that, I mean, I understand if, like, if you're not going to win this race, like, and your teammates obviously faster, hey, over the radio, say, hey, I'm going to let you by because you're faster than me. Go win this race. That's how I want to do it. That's not instead of stupid team orders like F1. I don't like team orders in F1 at all.
I mean, it could, back in the day when drivers used to be able to communicate with each other, I'm sure that could have been a conversation. It would have been one of those things where the spotters would have had to talk to each other and then say, hey, the 54 is wanting to know if he can just get by you. He's the faster car, or the 21 wants to get by you. He's the faster car, so that we can come out with a team win. And ultimately, it would still be up to the driver's decision. But as a fan, Matt, that's the other dynamic that you got to think about this. As a fan, if you're listening to your favorite drivers in car radio and they talk about, hey, let this guy go by you because he's faster so we can get a team win, how's that going to look on the fan base? Like, oh, this guy's not going for a win. He's just trying to do right by the team.
Yep.
And you could gain some fans, or you could lose a lot of fans because you don't have that aggression in you to be like, no, this is my spot. He can pass me clean if he wants to. And if he can, great, great for him. Then go get that win. But I'm going to make you work for it, kind of thing.
Yep. What about you, Valentino?
Yeah, man, like Jamie was saying, I think that, you know, everybody's fighting for everything they can, get every point they can. And that means everything to these drivers. They really practice on the sim rigs, on their times off, to get every bit of track position they can, every bit of track speed they can. Every driver is taking it serious week to week. And I think that letting someone go by is just giving everybody, just like Jamie's saying, just not the right thing to do. Just give it 100%. If he's on your bumper and he's your teammate and he's a little bit faster than you, you know, maybe give him the edge. Don't over fight him. Like, don't fight him to death. Like, if he's going to pass you, you know, in your head, and he's your teammate, I think let him slide by so he can try to run down the leader, but don't, like, let off at all or anything like that, ever.
Yeah. Rumble, do you have any thoughts?
I actually was going to stay out of this, but upon those team decisions, I'm going to act like my radio is not working. You tell me to let someone go, and you know, I'm going to race hard as I can the whole time. That's my two cents on that. There's no way. I'm here to race.
Yeah.
Right. I'm here to race.
It should be left up to the driver.
Yeah, it should never be left. It should never be given like a command. You should be left up to the driver whenever he's ready to, if that's his choice.
So if you were racing me, you would not race as hard as you could, right? You're not trying to get that spot all the time. And that's,
dude, I would.
It's so F1 that it just bothers me. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, that's my two cents on that.
So my thoughts on it is, I'm putting myself in Ty Gibbs' shoes here for a second. Christopher Bell, my teammate's already got a win. He won Phoenix. He's already locked into the playoffs. I'm chasing my first win of my career. So I am going to block the absolute hell out of Christopher Bell as long as I can, and hope to God that Byron makes a mistake so that way I can squeak by and get my first career win. That's my thoughts on it.
Always looking for the win.
I kind of have to agree with you there, but I agree to disagree with you. But I agree 100%. Like, I'm going to fight for that first win. Because like I said, your teammate stuck already in the playoffs.
Yep.
He has nothing to lose.
Nope.
I think, I think you're living on a prayer with that one. I just think, obviously, Byron had ran a really great race, leading 42 out of the 68 laps. So him making a mistake would be like you winning the lottery. But
Byron's won the last three road courses, actually.
And he
Byron was saving fuel there at the end too, just in case there was a late caution. So that gap was constantly being maintained. So Gibbs could have been there to capitalize and pounce had Byron made one just slight misjudgment getting into a corner. All it takes is one mistake.
But also, you could argue that with the back down pace that Byron was going at to manage the gap, it's less likely that he makes a mistake if he's managing the pace versus if he's pushing.
Yeah, he was just managing his fuel. End.
Very true. But
if
I'm
going 80%, it's less likely that I'll go off course than if I'm trying to push 110.
That is very. You're trying to manage. You're trying to manage your race. I absolutely agree. But in the end, I'm not leaving any leeway. I'm going for everything I can get. So,
Willie, second victory.
So before we go into our actual main topic of the night, I just got to give a special shout out. The driver of the 48 car. Back-to-back top fives, Bristol and Coda. He started, P28 at Bristol and finished fourth after managing probably the best one at managing tires in that final tire run at Bristol last week. And then he started P17 at Coda and just absolutely drove past everyone. There was no strategy involved. He just literally had speed. And Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's one of only two or three drivers to finish in the top five at every single COTA race since NASCAR has been there. He had a second place finish. He had a third place finish in the first year where they raced in the rain. Then he finished second at when Ross Chastain got his first win in 2022. He finished third last year, and he finished fourth this year.
Yep, I believe that is
accurate. Coda has become kind of like his bread and butter, if you will.
Okay.
Our main focus of the night, track limits. This is not F1. We do not need track limits in NASCAR. If you look at Saturday's race between Trucks and Xfinity, there were 37 course cutting penalties.
Does that include the just one that SVG got after the race? Or is that
Yes, that does include that one. Okay. There was 37 penalties, and now NASCAR was only calling course cutting penalties in the S's. And there were 37 of those penalties between the two races on Saturday, and there was only four in the cup race on Sunday. However, one of them was from Chase Elliott, who was saving his car from wrecking, getting into the S's. And the only way that he was able to save his car was to drive through the S's pretty much straight. And he ended up getting a drive-through penalty for that.
Bad call again.
Now, like I said, this is not F1.
It's only a bad call if they don't call it on everybody, right? Yeah, if everybody has the same penalty, then everybody has the same penalty. So it's only unfair if they're only calling it on certain people, in my opinion.
I think if you're forced off the track by accident, it shouldn't be counted.
Right.
Yes.
Fair enough. But.
So what I'm saying is, like I said, there was 37 on Saturday. Now, who knows however many there could have potentially been that did not get called.
Yeah.
Even the same thing on Sunday. So Ryan's been raising his hand here for a second, but I'll start with him. What can possibly be done to eliminate the need for track limits at some of these tracks, especially like COTA?
I would. All right. So the policy I'd like to see would actually be something that NASCAR uses at a couple of other tracks. Basically just NASCARify the track limits type rule. Similar to at Watkins Glen, where if you miss the bus stop or at, say, the road course, where if you miss one of the chicanes, you have a designated zone where you have to go and make a stop and go penalty. I feel it gives up the fair amount of time without completely ruining someone's race for a mistake that is a couple of inches in the wrong direction.
I don't think they'd be so strict on,
especially in the athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it being less strict than it was as well, but I know there were also a couple of times down the end of that race that I was mentioning on a number of occasions that I thought I saw SVG going off course to the same extent that I saw other guys get penalized for, and they didn't.
I mean, if you're gonna do track limits, then do it everywhere on the track.
Well, and that's the thing.
That's not...
NASCAR typically has pretty lax track limits. Again, aside from places like the bus stop at Watkins Glen and the two chicanes at Charlotte, they typically have pretty lax track limits violations. So
yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with that. Yeah,
I'd like to see added in. It would NASCARify the rules, but I don't think NASCARifying it in a NASCAR race is necessarily a bad thing.
Well, I mean, do you think, like, I mean, we've all seen the layout of the track and stuff, but do you think there might be a place that they could set up where maybe they do like what they do at like Watkins Glen and the Roval, where there's, if you get a course cutting penalty, you just do a stop and go, and then you just go? Because I honestly, like, I'm not a Chase Elliott fan, but for him to be running fifth and get a course cutting penalty for saving his car and then having to do a drive-through penalty and lose all that track position and potentially a good finish, it's just kind of bullcrap to me, honestly.
Yep.
And it is. He literally hung on to his car, and any driver is going to try and do that, hang on to their car, keep racing. I think it is a bad call, but as long as everybody's getting the same call, I guess you can't really say much, right? But I've heard you guys say maybe other people weren't getting that call, but from what I understand, they got people standing there looking at it and saying, yep, he went out there and it's penalty time, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was,
like, everybody's got to deal with the same shit, right?
There was another controversial course cutting call where Brandon Jones was going to win stage two of the Xfinity Series race, and on the last lap of the stage, his tires were inside the S's by like 3 inches, and they called him for it, and it took them almost 10 minutes to figure out whether he cut the course or not, and then took the stage win away from him. But Jamie was raising his hand. Go ahead, Jamie. What do you got, man?
If we're talking like adjustments, like I agree with Rumble. They made the rule, and there was a lot of people who were exploiting it, hence why there was a high number of infractions for that. However, on oval races, and what is they have that yellow line. What's the common consensus about that yellow line?
You don't go below the yellow line to try to advance your position.
And
but that's only on super speedways.
Let me finish.
Okay.
Because of it being on super speedways, because of the draft and everything like that. What's the one loophole when it comes to going below the line?
You get hit below the yellow line.
So why not institute that when it comes to like those S turns? If you are hit and you get, like, they got in car visuals, they have all the tools required to see if he's purposely steering left or right or blah 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 blah.
Yep.
If you can see a driver is actively trying to keep the car under control and he just so happens to be going through the S turns, there should be a loophole. There should be a leeway on that to where they don't call that infraction because it's a circumstance that he wasn't purposely doing it. Now, whether that be Chase Elliott, whether that be Christopher Jones, or even somebody younger, like a Zane Smith.
Is Christopher Jones a fantasy driver?
You mean Christopher Bell?
Yeah, Christopher Bell or Brandon Jones. Who are we talking about here?
Yeah, but we'll just throw both of them.
Okay.
But regardless of the matter, it could be a nobody by the name of Christopher Jones or a Chase Elliott. And if they just see that there is something going on that has caused them to do the infraction, but they're not it's not an all-purpose thing. It's not like that's their driving lane or anything like that. Like, there was another car involved, then they should have a rule like that, similar to a super speedway, don't go below the yellow line rule. That's my take on that. But okay. I agree with Rumble. yes, I'm a Chase Elliott fan. Sucks that it happened to him. But at the same time, they've been calling it all weekend. Granted, there's circumstances out of his control, but
I agree with you. I'm a Chase fan, but if you're gonna call it for one, you call it for everybody, right? It's there's no gray area in it. It is what it is, and you get called for it, right? Does that make sense? It does to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give NASCAR this much credit, is you know they were consistent all weekend. Like I said, you know, there's no telling how many calls that they may have missed, because it's more, if you throw baseball into it, it's more of a ball and strike call, you know? So, I mean, who knows? But Tyler, what do you got, man?
Go ahead,
Jamie, real quick.
I also have one more topic to talk about before we get into bowls. I just wanted to throw that out there before Tyler started.
So my position on the track cutting penalty is, if you're going to be strict, do it to the entire track instead of just one area.
Well, we'll see.
That's my problem.
So, Denny Hamlin was talking about this on his show. Early Saturday morning before practice and qualifying, NASCAR had sent out a message saying that they were going to be issuing penalties for just cutting the S's. And then 2 hours before practice, they said that they were going to be issuing penalties if you cut any corner on the course. And then they reverted back to just the S's like 10 minutes before practice. So it seems like NASCAR couldn't make up their minds on where they wanted to enforce this penalty. If they can't make up their minds, don't enforce the penalty at all. I don't know.
And that kind of goes back to the whole idea of changing the penalty from a full lap or a full pass down pit road, which is cost the driver. I think the estimates were somewhere in the 20 to 25 seconds of on track time to potentially just a stop and go, where you lose 2-3 seconds of on track time.
Can I add on something?
It would make a questionable call less costly.
Yep. Go ahead, Tyler.
This is one thing I do like about F1. They don't just like penalize you right off the bat. They give you warning. I like the idea of having warnings, like, "Hey, you're caught in the track. You got to back off a little bit." And then, like, instead of like having to drive through or stop, add like 3 seconds to their time, not like 30 seconds. That's a little too much. I say like 3 or 5 seconds is like that's the one thing I personally like F1 when they just do the penalties is 3 and 5 seconds for quarter cutting. And it's fair. It keeps them from not losing too many positions.
Go ahead, Jamie.
You guys keep talking about like stop and goes. I'm very unfamiliar with the track. Granted, I watched it on Sunday, but is there really a spot where they could have a stop and go?
I mean, like, they might have runoff areas.
Not there. Not where Chase went off. There's nothing he could do there. There's nothing he could do there.
Yeah, if they were to institute a stop and go, like you're suggesting, what part, like, let's say they have the fraction happening inside the S's, is there another spot in the track where they would be able to just pull off, turn stop, nine, and then go?
Turn nine.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a couple turns right after the S's where there's a lot of runoff, like Ryan said, where they could set up something where the drivers could, like, come up and, like, slow down going into the corner and just pull off the track real quick, I mean, do their stop and go, and then get back on track.
Box, essentially.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, a penalty box.
But with those turns, like, that close to it, would... Like if there was a wreck that would happen because of the braking points and things like that, would it be far enough out of the way to where they still wouldn't get collected in there? And let's say they were serving a penalty and something happened where people got into each other with braking points.
Sounds to me like trouble. Knock that shit off.
That's why I like
Tyler or Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong. There's one of the straightaways where there is nothing but pavement going down that straightaway where they could actually set up like a stop and go area where it would be in between turns. So they really wouldn't be in danger of getting hit, set a wreck, happening coming into that corner.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
I think turn nine.
Aside from the S's, nine. I know in the S's there's the patches of grass like right near where they were making the corners, but aren't there massive spots of essentially painted pavement as well that are off the course, if I'm not mistaken?
At the very beginning of the S's.
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, they're...
Now...
Yeah, now, of course, that being at the very beginning of the S's doesn't help the situation as to trying to find a good spot to
do. Oh, yeah, you'd have them do in a runoff area and then try and merge back in. It just seems just a little too much.
Well, and it's about to a fair penalty because doing a pass on pit road was killing them out there.
Well, I mean, if you look at Watkins Glen, if you blow the bus stop, you do a stop and go right there in the bus stop in that little paved area, and then you merge back on track where the cars are exiting the bus stop. So it's no more or less dangerous than if you set something up at Coda where there's like a straightaway where they kind of try to merge back into traffic.
That is true. That you have a valid point.
And
that is true.
Same thing with the Charlotte back Roble. In there, you blow the back stretch chicane or the front stretch chicane, you have to come and make a stop on the front stretch, like what happened with Jimmy Johnson had to do it in 2018, and a bunch of other drivers in over the course of the Roble's history have had to make that front stretch stop and go. Which that's front stretch is not exactly spacious, but you still got to make the stop to serve the penalty.
Back to what I was saying about the time penalties, I don't think you should pass the start of a drive through for cutting the course. That's Isaiah's too. Like I said, I think we should implement a time penalty, not 30 seconds, but 5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with that. But Dale Jr. had William Byron call in this week on the download. He has the race winners call in every week. And Byron said the same thing that Kevin Harvick said on his podcast. I don't know if you guys know, Harvick's got his own podcast now called Happy Hour.
Yep.
And he said that Coda has turtles that they set up for the F1 races. And they are varying heights of turtles depending on which corner they're going into. Now, Harvick said that NASCAR could have those turtles set up in the S's to deter drivers from cutting the course because, you know, the ride heights are so low on those cars. If you run over those turtles, you're probably going to destroy your car.
Yep.
Now, I would say in my opinion, I would say either what Tyler said, either issue a time penalty to the driver instead of having them do a pass through, or set up the turtles in the S's to just completely eliminate the need for trying to drive through the S's unless you are quote unquote trying to save your car from wrecking like Chase Elliott.
Remember what happened the last time they had turtles at Indianapolis Road Course?
Well, yeah.
Remember how much?
I mean, that's true because Byron was one of the victims of that.
That's the biggest thing that can be said about all this is that there is no perfect plan.
Yeah.
That's why I say the best idea is the time penalty because it's being fair while also being penalizing.
Yeah. The best idea is to get rid of Coda and save that for open wheel cars and whatnot.
Nah, keep Coda.
Yeah.
Keep Coda.
Yeah. Get rid of Coda.
All right. Now, well, before we get into our next topic of the night, I just wanted to share a little bit of breaking news that I posted in our group chat earlier. NASCAR is possibly looking at the possibility of holding a race at Long Beach. Granted, if IndyCar allows it. Now, IndyCar executives such as Roger Penske have been apparently trying to block NASCAR's efforts from trying to run a race there. But, Jamie, starting with you, if NASCAR were to run a race at Long Beach, would it be a exhibition race, or would you think it would be a points race?
Make it a point race. If you're going to go big all the way.
What about you, Tyler?
Honestly, to start off with an exhibition to see how the cars handle the track and then do a point race.
Valentina?
Long Beach is a tight track, so...
Every race should be a point race, so a point race for sure.
Rumble, what about you?
Why are we trying so hard to do so many road courses? I'm an old school guy. I just don't get it. Like, how many road courses do they want a year? 10, 12? What's our goal here? It's not my favorite. I'm going to leave it at that.
I got to agree with that.
Nope. Ryan?
First things first, the report I saw was actually that NASCAR is looking to buy a 50% ownership stake in the event weekend, which would potentially move the IndyCar race off the IndyCar calendar at Long Beach, which is, I would say, much more significant than just NASCAR wanting to hold a race there.
If they lose Indy, if Long Beach loses IndyCar, which has been a staple for IndyCar forever.
Because if that would be like IndyCar
St. Petersburg.
That'd be like losing the Indy 500 of road courses.
Because again, if NASCAR buys a 50% ownership stake, fill up the Long Beach Grand Prix weekend with IMSA, which is NASCAR owned, and NASCAR, which is shocker, NASCAR owned, and you essentially move IndyCar off of it. Would also explain IndyCar's desperation to try and block the move. So,
yeah, because IndyCar, NASCAR there because NASCAR is taking over IndyCar right now.
Well,
I'm going to tell you this right now. Can I actually say something real quick?
Go ahead.
My thing is with the IndyCar. IndyCar wants its own prized events. That's why they have the Indy 500.
Yep.
That's why they have Long Beach. Long Beach in Indianapolis. Are the IndyCars two staples? Why would NASCAR try to take over? Oh, okay, I understand the Brickyard because the Brickyard's the Brickyard. Well, but yeah, Long Beach is IndyCar and sports cars. It should be sports cars, and NASCAR
California.
Should have nothing to do with it.
NASCAR wants to be in Southern California. Honestly, if it's between Long Beach and racing inside a Dodger Stadium, I will gladly take Long Beach.
Oh, absolutely.
Put a track inside of that Dodger Stadium.
100%, Ryan. 100%, Ryan. If that's what it's coming down to, what I'm talking about is why are we trying so hard to get away from our roots? I'm a 51-year-old fan, and I don't understand why we're always trying to do the Chicago street course. We're looking at Miami. What are we doing here? Like, it makes no sense to me. The viewership is low on it. It's just not what we should be doing. We should be worried about turning left.
Go back to Rockingham, baby.
Yes.
I was going to say something. If they want a road course in Southern California, Riverside.
Riverside doesn't exist anymore.
Right? Riverside doesn't exist anymore, but absolutely. I hear you there. What is wrong with Sonoma? What's wrong with the Glen? I'm just an old 50-year-old fan. 51-year-old fan, but
Northern California, though.
Those are the tracks that I know and I love, and this new stuff, I hate the robot shark. I hate the robot shark. I'm right. I know there's a lot of you that do. I'm not discounting you because you guys enjoy it, but I don't enjoy it. I'm not a big fan of turning left and right.
NASCAR is turning left.
I think somewhere between four to six is about the right amount. Of road courses, I will say that. I think
Well, two things real quick. One, it sounds like Rumble is rumbling about something.
I am.
And two, you were talking about viewership just a second ago. They just released the numbers today. The viewership for COTA was up 10% from last year's race, which makes it every single race this year. The viewership has been up in the double digits over last year.
That's right.
All right. I'm just an old holdout. I had the race on, but I watched 16 laps of it because I was out having a smoke and a beer, and I really don't care about that race. None of it really means anything to me, right?
they're racing pretty good. A lot, not a whole lot of road courses back in the day, but they're racing road courses like
Riverside,
like Sonoma, and the Glen, and
actually, I'm gonna tell you this right now, Rumble.
They're racing in Japan.
Sonoma didn't come around until the '90s, and Watkins Glen was not even there until like 1984.
Right, but I'm from back in that age, and I'm telling you, those are the two road courses that I actually respect. I'm just old school, and it's going to be hard to change my mind on it. And to me, I don't like Coda. I don't like the Robles. I just don't like that shit.
Yeah, I don't like it. That's the only one I don't like.
All right. Yeah. So real quick, a little bit more breaking news that broke earlier this week. NASCAR is actually taking over officiating operations for Bowman Grace Stadium in North Carolina. I don't know if you guys have ever seen videos of any of these races at Bowman Gray, but they are an absolute circus, as the guys at DBC call it. Is it possible that we might be, I mean, Dale Jr. said that he predicts we'll see a truck race there in the next year or two,
but that would be awesome.
Would it be possible that we might see a cup race there, whether it be a points race or maybe the Clash or the All-Star race?
That would be great in my books.
How would you fit 40 cars around that track, first off? No, man. I mean, it's a quarter.
It's the same size as the LA Coliseum.
Yeah, but, you need a
little different.
This is kind of my view of it, is that the clips from Bowman Gray Speedway and all that is a big reason why I think a lot of the local track drivers don't get nearly the amount of credit that they should for the talent that some of them have, is because people see stuff like Bowman Gray where they're just out there essentially having a demolition derby in what's supposed to be a real race.
Yep. I saw the wheels in Jamie's head turning for about a minute or two. So Jamie, give me some of your thoughts, buddy.
Absolutely not. It'll be equivalent to a 5-year-old holding as many toy cars as he can in his hand in his mom's kitchen, just trying to spin himself in circles. That's what that race is going to look like.
It's going to look like a
little kid can't hold on to any cars, and eventually some cars are going to fly out of his hand and smack his mom in the foot, and you're just going to have a whole bunch of different drivers just getting frustrated and collecting into each other, and you may have an end result with maybe 1 to 2 cars that don't have any type of damage.
Yeah.
Just like the big Clash in 2020.
I honestly think it would make the Clash at the Coliseum look like the freaking greatest race in the world, honestly.
And the Clash at the Coliseum was the snooze fest the last 3 years.
All right.
Bring those cars home.
Okay, open question to everyone here. Do y'all think that what's going on in the Coliseum should happen this next coming season, and we should do this again? Y'all pretty happy with the results? I don't find it that impressive at all.
They have not said anything about the Clash coming back to the Coliseum yet. Normally, the last few years, they've announced it right after the Clash, but we haven't heard anything, so I'm thinking they're moving the Clash for 2025.
You know what they should do? The Clash at the Rock.
Right. At the Rock, we should go somewhere that we should go to a racetrack.
The Rocking Hands
Speedway. How about turn it back to Daytona? Go back to the route.
Yes.
Did y'all hear that they found moonshine? I saw that last night.
Yes, I saw
that.
Hey,
they're having a party, baby.
Hey, can I say something? How about the Clash like it was in the 90s, where they would split up and it's like, what, a 20-lap race total?
Yeah.
And they would do 2 10-lap segments and flip the field after the 10 laps.
Where would you like to see that run, though?
Daytona.
But
Daytona.
My only problem there is looking at the last Daytona. Couple of Clashes at Daytona, they were essentially single-file practice sessions while waiting for the big crash at the end.
All right, and so my final point on this is that the Clash is actually supposed to get us fired up for the 500 and all that stuff. It's at Daytona. That's where it should be. That's where it was. That's where it should be now. And let's fix it. And let's make it right. Racing at the Coliseum is silly. It's just silly. It's just a pack of cars driving around, cleaning each other out, and driving over each other. Let's make this right. Fix it, NASCAR.
Jamie's over there shaking his head. I need to hear what he's thinking.
So, I'll start with this. I agree 100% with Rumble on how it's been done at the Coliseum. It is a silly race. I do not enjoy it. However, that race does not need to go back to Daytona, because no one cares about that race being at Daytona because of what it has been. It's been
wild driving, been practice
laps. It's been, we're just going to drive single file, and then the last two laps, maybe you'll see us go two wide. Maybe no one's going three wide. We're all going to go two wide, and you may get that one guy who wants to try and be the all-star and try to win the dang thing and create a third line on the last lap. But it's boring. It's very boring. It's not energizing me to for the 500 or anything like that. But if they were to take it to like a Rockingham or to a another vintage track that gets repaved,
for that race, keep it in Florida.
Yeah, go there. And if it's a track where they're not just drafting with each other, and they actually have something to win, and the pie is like double than what they normal winnings are. And you dangle that in front of them on an old track that wants to get resurfaced up to potentially get Truck Series maybe back on that circuit. By all means, let's go with that.
What about Five Flags?
Racing for an all-star race is what I want.
Ryan just said Five Flags, Tyler.
Yeah, I just said Five Flags. I mean, keep it in Florida, but just move it to a short track in Florida.
I mean, to add to Jamie's point, I agree to a certain extent. You know, the Clash or the Bud Shootout, or previously it was the Clash, had always been run at Daytona as part of Speed Weeks. But if you look back at the last Clash that they had on the Super Speedway of Daytona, there was like seven cars running at the finish. And Eric Jones won the race, as quoted by Mike Joy, in a car that was ready for the dumpster. Like, that car was beat to hell and somehow won the race because Denny Hamlin, even though he was a lap down, had the most undamaged car of the race.
Yeah,
and just pushed the hell out of Eric Jones to the win. But I mean, I know there's fans out there who, you know, they watch NASCAR and live for the crashes and all that good stuff. But to me, like, the crashes are good, you know, it's entertaining and stuff like that, but that's not what all NASCAR is about. It's not what NASCAR is about. It's about good, hard racing. And I honestly think if they can improve the short track, or, well, I wouldn't even say intermediate, because the intermediate package is good. If you want to move it to a short track, you need to drastically change and improve the short track package, because I want, even though it's an exhibition race, I want good, hard racing at a short track for someone to walk away with just bragging rights, you know, not a car that has tape flying off of it and the hood getting ready to buckle at 200 miles an hour, you know, or like Rumble said, I don't want to see a race on a little quarter mile track where they can't even get above 50 miles an hour going down the straightaways.
Well, yeah. That kind of goes back to a question I was going to ask Rumble, is how he would feel if they replaced the Clash of the Coliseum with the Clash at Bowman Gray. Cause I feel like anyone who thinks that that's a significant upgrade is looking in the wrong direction.
They're high as hell, is what I agree. I think
higher than you, Tyler.
You know what? I agree with you, Ryan, because I think we can aspire to better Clash races than what we've been seeing for the last couple of years. To me, it's just a gimmick. It's just a gimmick. It's not inspiring anyone to. This was supposed to inspire people out of California, was it not, to become NASCAR fans and, you know, this race.
Get it started.
They're not there. They are not the people that are getting on planes and flying across the country or getting in their cars and driving across the country to go watch races. It's just, it's not where I think we need to be.
Well,
I don't really know how to
say it. Sponsors, though, too, starting off the season in a big market like L.A. Honestly, Atlanta wouldn't be a bad choice potentially for a
Miami
clash if you want to do it on a super speedway style race. Because Atlanta's another one of those big markets that usually draws out a bunch of the one-off sponsors.
What about Atlanta's Miami? Nice.
Yeah, Miami, Vegas, even if you want to try and still chase the West.
I have an idea that just popped into my head too, and I really hope someone from
finale.
I really hope someone from NASCAR listens to this and they catch this idea, because I've heard nobody else talk about it ever. I've heard a lot of fans say that they miss NASCAR racing on the dirt somewhat, whether it be Dirt Bristol or Knoxville with the trucks or whatever.
Or Eldora.
You want a good clash, bring back the Prelude to the Dream and rename it the Clash and put the damn cup drivers in super late models and let them race on the dirt.
I am 100% down
to
that.
On Daytona?
No. Bring it back to Eldora where they used to run it a while back, where like you had Jeff Gordon running a super late model that was painted like his 24 DuPont car, and put 24 of them out there like you would see at at your local dirt track on a Saturday night, and let them race for 75 laps and see who comes out the winner.
And for $1 million.
Yeah.
Lol, Kyle Larson wins.
Or Christopher Bell. Or Chase Briscoe.
Or Reddick.
I think you want to talk about viewership. I guarantee you viewership would skyrocket for that race.
Oh, yeah. Hands down.
All right.
And no, we got to get Tony Stewart, because I think Tony Stewart would 100%.
I'd just be curious to see what the viewership would be like for a dirt race on Daytona Beach, but I know that that's way pie in the sky thinking.
All right, well, those are great debates there. We're going to move into green flags and black flags, and for anybody who is listening to this for the very first time, our green flags are something that we enjoyed from the race weekend from any series. And the black flag is the same, something you didn't like. So starting with Jamie, what are your green flags and black flags from the COTA/Australia Grand Prix weekend?
Green flag, I will say the racing. The racing was good. For road course racing, amongst the weekend, there was multiple talking points that we got to talk about with good hard racing. Between different drivers amongst all the different series. But my black flag is I feel like there should have been more how do I word this correctly here? There was plenty of incidents that could have warranted a yellow flag. But that I think NASCAR purposely chose not to throw. So I would like to see more consistency when it comes to the yellow flag. I know they were trying to improve the road course feel, but some of the best points of road course is if there is a wreck that warrants a yellow flag, throw it. Despite your objective view on it. And what do the fans like? They like crashes. Yes, cautions breed cautions, but that's just a part of racing. And just before we get into everyone else's flags, the other thing I wanted to bring up is Kyle Busch got in the face of Christopher Bell.
Yeah, I forgot to bring that up.
Yeah, and talked about, Have I ever wrecked you? Have I ever spun you on purpose? Things like that. Heated in the moment. Now, kudos to Christopher Bell being a man, just kind of standing there looking him in the eye and just acknowledging everything because, you know, they used to be teammates, things like that. But My question to you guys is, do you think that now the respect that Kyle Busch had been giving JGR is gone? Do you think he's going to be racing them twice as hard now that he now has that one little thing to get underneath his skin?
Well, so I would say yes, because it, I don't know if you saw the video, but this is twice, 2 years in a row, that Christopher Bell has spun Kyle Busch out at Coda. And he told Bell that he told Bell that there won't be a third time, and that you've got one coming. And that, I mean, that's being speculated, but knowing Kyle Busch, you know, he's probably going to repay the favor to Christopher Bell at some point. But this is a different, ever since he went to RCR, this is a different Kyle Busch that we're seeing. He's actually being more liked by the fans. And I think it had a lot to do with him racing for who he was racing for. And so I'm on the side of, yes, I think the respect that he had for JGR is completely out the window.
What do you guys think? Any of y'all can pop off mute and chime in.
Well, here. I was going to say, well, I don't think Kyle Busch should have respect for the way JGR treated him in last year.
To be quite fair, the way that Joe Gibbs handled the situation, not necessarily even the teammates. Because I feel like his relationship with his teammates all the way through that final season was good. It was just kind of the animosity towards the fact that, oh, we still haven't gotten a deal done. It's March, it's April, it's May, and it's still, I don't know, ask Joe.
Yep. How about you, Valentino?
If I'm not mistaken, from what I saw from the video, I think Busch said something about that's twice, the third time I'm kicking your ASS, but I don't know if that's exactly what he said, but I know one thing. Christopher Bell went to give him a handshake at the end. He just completely disregarded. Yeah,
I was going to say, how about Bell trying to nap him up there at the end, and Kyle Busch was like, no.
Say, mind you, those funny, two spins, man, with Bell were also his only two races at COTA that weren't driving the 18 car for Joe Gibbs, too.
I honestly think, you know, there was already...
Bell had a thing about... When it comes to Coda, Bell, for some reason, loves Kyle's because he got into Larson and he got into Busch.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See, his thing is he actually went on record and said that he dumped Larson. It wasn't intentional, but he straight up dumped him. And the whole thing with Kyle Busch was, you know, Bell was trying to make the corner and Kyle Busch was way wide and then just cut down on Bell. You know, because he didn't think that Bell was still going to be there.
I think he was trying to get a run out of the corner.
That corner is taken by 99% of these cup drivers because of just how heavy these big, heavy stock cars are. You kind of have to take that corner wide, and the way the exit of that corner is angled, it's just a really awkward angle for a big, heavy stock car.
Well, I saw a car
with a massive acceleration.
He yep. wanted to get a run out of the corner. I think that was what he was trying to do. Honestly, like you were saying before, though, to answer your question, I think that that Kyle Busch already had some bad blood with JGR going into the season, and this even made it a little worse considering it's the second year in a row. That's just unbelievable.
Yep.
I mean, he's trying to get some. He's trying to get something going, you know? He's trying to get some heat under his tires, so.
Yep. Rumble, you got any thoughts to Jamie's question?
Yeah, I'm gonna say Christopher Bell drives like an ass, and I'm still first in the points in our picks there, boys and girls. Yeep wop.
I picked a bad week to Tate McDowell.
Yeah. All right.
I saw that, Ryan.
I picked Tyler Reddick. I mean,
you keep having bad luck, Ryan.
Like, how many times can I take the worst driver of everybody when it's not even right? an out there pick?
Yeah.
It's not like I'm going to choosing the David Reagans and the Kamui Kobayashis of the world. I'm going and taking the guys who are pretty safe top 10, top 15 picks, and they end up 37. Three wrecks in the Vegas race for Bell, and I didn't even get my choice of pick.
Yeah.
Not of my name. Maybe you should all save your picks until after qualifying. That's what I'm going to throw out there.
Well, we're gonna switch it up. We need to have picks in by Thursday afternoon.
Oh Jesus! Then I'm gonna be screwed after that.
Tyler, what are your green flags and black flags from the weekend, buddy?
My green flags for the weekend was actually the race wasn't terrible overall. It was actually a solid race. And honestly, like I said, my black flag is the fact that like nobody mentioned it for their black flag. The fact of the poor officiating and the poor cut, the inconsistent calls of penalties for the corner cutting, I think that should be addressed for next road course and next year at COTA.
Yep. What about you, Valentino?
I'm going to have to say for the green flags, AJ Allmendinger coming in and getting the top 10 finish. But obviously, he's really good at every road course he drives. He just had a great day and finished top 10. I always like to give AJ Allmendinger some props, man, because he's a great road course driver. And for my, is it black flag?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so for my black flag, it's going to be obviously Chase Elliott just getting pretty much having a day slaughtered by, I mean, I would say a bad call, but you know. It is what it is. You got to move on about it. But I think Chase Elliott's my black flag because he just got it. Just had a horrible thing happen to him and just was having a great day. Could have probably even finished top three, you know, if we would not made a mistake. But black flag's going to be Chase Elliott for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I think he would have gotten top five for sure.
Rumble, what about you? What are yours?
I already said it. Everything's great. I'm on top of the points in our personal picks there. And I just don't care. It's road course racing. Let's get back to this when we get somewhere good, in my opinion.
I'm submitting my pick here now, William Byron.
Oh, well, we'll get to that in just a second. Ryan, what are yours?
All right, so my green flag definitely has to go to both AJ Allmendinger and SVG for the amazing battle they gave us throughout the, what was it, stage two in the Xfinity race, basically racing to the pit stop to the end of, before the end of the second stage because of the new old rules where they added back in the stage breaks for the cautions. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of that because it does force guys like SVG and Allmendinger, who would ideally like to grab both points and be able to put themselves in position for the end of the race, but making them have to choose between one or the other is not my favorite thing in the world. But the duel that those two gave us coming down through the final laps of that stage was pretty good. And my black flag... Oh, wait, sorry. I've moved a few inches. I was out of bounds.
That's a pass through. You cut the corner.
Yeah, I gotta go do a pass through. And yes, I was actually setting that up the whole time I was sliding that way.
What do you think, Kevin Harvick? For skipping this check.
But yes, no, I was actually setting that up the entire time I was sliding that way.
What are your black flags?
I just got mine. Out of bounds.
I got you.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, same as Tyler, the excessive pass-through penalties that we already discussed in at length.
Yeah. So my green flags have to go to the Cup Series as a whole. I mean, you know, they had a natural race, you know, if you take out the stage breaks. Not necessarily the fastest car won, but you know, it was a very, very solid race, especially for a road course race. One of the better ones that I enjoyed because there was a little bit of strategy involved come to the end and all that stuff. And another green flag is, like I stated earlier, that 48 car on a little bit of a momentum, back-to-back top fives. And my black flag, stating the obvious here, has to go to Austin Hill for, as he quotes, being a little sissy and not being able to take out what he can dish. Yeah, I mean, overall, it was a good weekend. So we're going to go into our final topic of the night. We're going short track racing on Sunday night, Easter. We're going to Richmond. Now, this is going to be the third race with this short track package, or short track slash road course package, if you will. Phoenix, obviously. Phoenix is going to Phoenix. Doesn't really matter what you bring there. It's going to be about the same, honestly. Bristol, they didn't run the short track package. They ran the intermediate package, but we all saw what happened with the tires and stuff. Now, I think with this short track package, and if they bring that same tire from Bristol to Richmond, we could be in for one hell of a race come Sunday night.
Hell yeah.
It also depends on the tire. And the track's going to be a lot cooler, too, if you think about it.
I love Richmond. One of my favorite tracks.
Hell yeah.
Go.
I love Richmond.
Hell yeah, let's go.
It's going to be some good racing, I think. They're in the intermediate package.
No, a short track package.
Okay.
Yep.
Sorry.
I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but Bubba Pollard is making his Xfinity Series debut on Saturday for Dale Jr. in the 88 car.
Yep.
He is actually from a town about an hour from me, Senoia, Georgia. He actually co-owns Senoia Speedway, which is a dirt track down there that me and my wife frequent quite a bit during the spring and summertime. And so I'm actually very, very excited for him to be getting a big break like that. And I hope that he really, really does well. But we're going to move into our race picks. Brandon, my buddy, won race picks this past weekend with William Byron. Hopefully he'll be able to join us on the podcast one day soon. But the biggest shocker was Ashley, my wife. She picked Christopher Bell and bumped up four spots in
the points.
Good
job, Ashley.
She went from eighth to fourth in the points.
Yeah, she did.
And as Rumble stated, he has a sort of a commanding lead in points. He's 5 points above Brandon, who moved into second after his win.
Because I wait till the last second to make my pick.
Well, not anymore, buddy.
I know that. You laid that out. I get it.
So we now have 13 people doing race picks. So we changed up the points a little bit. The winner gets 13 points now. And then if your pick actually wins the race, you still get the one bonus point. So you can get a max of 14 points. But I have a special announcement for you guys. And I am announcing it in advance. We will be doing race picks for the All-Star race.
Oh, I thought you were going to North Wilkesboro. It's going to be double points. Dang.
All-Star should be double points.
You are correct, Tyler. The All-Star race will be worth double points.
Okay. So
pay attention to the lineups and entry list for the All-Star race. We'll most likely do race picks for the All-Star race after the All-Star Open, whenever that may be. So it may not be on the podcast. It'll probably be like that day. And we'll just shoot them over in the group chat, and I'll get them wrote down and stuff. But we're going to start with Rumble, who's the points lead. Who is your pick for Richmond, sir?
I thought I had till Thursday.
Okay. Well, all right. I'll give you till tomorrow afternoon.
Shit now. Tomorrow. You guys fire away.
What you going to learn in the next day or so without any practice laps?
Yeah. So next in line in the podcast would be Tyler. William Byron?
William Byron's been on fire at Richmond lately.
All right.
He's last year's fall with. He's last year's spring winner. Just remember that.
Yep. Next pick is Jamie.
A lot of places last year.
Next pick is Jamie. You're muted.
I'm still thinking. I was hoping y'all were going to talk for a little bit more while I was still pondering on who I was going to take here. Well, the last time I had a good finish was because the villain did it. So I'm going to go Dennis the Menace.
All right. All right, next in line will be me. I am going to take Kyle Larson.
Ooh, that's a good pick.
Yeah, not a bad pick.
All right, next will be Ryan.
McDowell. Right, so I'm going to go for Christopher Bell. The way he raced at Phoenix definitely shows a lot of potential in the Toyotas on the short tracks. Not to mention flat short tracks kind of tend to be his thing. Look at his track record at this track in Xfinity, Iowa in Xfinity, New Hampshire. Every single time he's ever set foot in the state of New Hampshire, he leaves with a checkered flag.
I hope you realize that Richmond and Iowa are not flat. They are far from flat. They're like 14 degrees of banking. They're a lot flatter
than, say, Bristol is. Like, yeah, there is some banking there, but they are definitely not banked like Bristol is, or Slinger, or any of these other banked short tracks.
Oh, God, yeah, let's say, yeah, Slinger is something else.
Yeah.
All right, so Ryan picks Christopher Bell. Valentino.
Yes, sir. I'm going to have to go with last year. They ran pretty well. Other than the driver being hurt, he had a little snowboarding accident. Chase Elliott is going to win the race this week.
All right.
Second place here last year in the spring in the hands of, Josh Berry?
It's Josh Berry, yep.
That's right.
And, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he's wearing Chase Elliott's shirt while we're doing the pod.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with that.
I'm tired.
I would have picked Chase Elliott, but I'm a Chase Elliott fan, but I'm trying to be realistic.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm just gonna mess with Will, and I'm gonna take Bubba. I'm taking Bubba.
Oh shit!
Bubba tonight, just to take his pick away from him.
Okay.
Damn. Okay. Okay. I'm going to be upset and I'm going to laugh at the same time if Bubba Wallace goes out and wins on Sunday night.
Just remember who might punt you during Thomas Cup tomorrow.
Right?
He just returns the favor on the track tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will get other picks through text and group chat.
You remember I went with Bubba. You tell Will I said that.
I'll post it in the group chat. I mean, there's some people who are in here who are not in our group chat, so I'll get like Ryan or Ben to message them and stuff like that. But
when it comes to Richmond, though, some couple of dark horses, people who just not necessarily like rock stars there, but just have great finishes. Like Josh Berry is one of them, so I would not be surprised to see him in the top 10. Chris Buescher is also another one. He just performs really well at Richmond for some. He's got a knack for the track, and I think this is a good day to see Chris Buescher. My bold prediction for sponsored by W Energy is that Chris Buescher is going to be in the top three when everything's said and done.
Eli is going to take Alex Bowman.
Okay, Eli taking Alex Bowman for the second week in a row.
Can I give a bold prediction too?
Fire away.
Sponsored by the Alkali Project. It's going to be Ty Gibbs is going to get a top five.
I wouldn't be surprised.
He's been running well.
You know what?
Nope,
maybe
Ty Gibbs
go ahead and push
well.
The 20 to a victory here.
That wouldn't shock me at all.
McPusher launched Richmond.
But yeah, if you want to pencil that in, Chris Buescher, top three finish.
I mean, he he did win the fall race here.
Well, I don't know what just happened, but my computer just deleted everything.
Uh-oh.
Let's go back, backslash.
We can't have a pod without Rumble saying that at least once.
Oh, who said what backslash?
Right?
Oh, you just go back. Are you in like Word or something?
I'm in Google Documents.
Word. You like backspace, back it, like backpedal it.
Yeah, I've got the.
No, it literally. It literally wiped.
Who took everybody? But I can piece it together.
I literally had like. I just went to type Alex Bowman, and it just deleted every single thing dating all the way back to Daytona. Like the whole page is gone.
Well, hopefully that's not a bad omen for Bowman the Showman at Richmond.
Well, I mean, I'll go. We've all got ours locked in, so I'll go back and listen later, and I'll go back and look at the picture from last week's points, and just go from Coda and go from there.
And there goes Alex Bowman. Nope.
I know there's plenty of people who would not be upset if Richmond went and wiped the slate completely clean, just blow the entire thing up. Although I'd be very disappointed. Yeah.
How's a flat tire?
Shut up.
I love Richmond Raceway. It is my favorite track on the entire circuit, and I know I'm very much on my own in that one. But I love that.
I love Richmond. In the words of the great Jeff Gordon, the outside sucks.
There you go.
The bump and run.
Richmond, north of Richmond. Just kidding.
All right. I was gonna be an a-hole and just be a smartass, but I'm not. I'm gonna keep that comment to myself.
Fuck! Well, it seems a little late to do it now. You might as well just fire away.
Ash wants Hamlin.
We had a hell of a podcast tonight.
Jamie picked Hamlin already.
Yep. Yeah, he took Dennis the Menace.
Still waiting to hear back from Bob. So. I'll let everybody know about that.
Well, anyways, I'll go back and redo everything. I'll listen to the podcast tomorrow whenever it gets posted, and I'll get everything locked in with the points from Coda and all that stuff. So
yeah, I've got the list.
We'll be all right.
It's already posted there.
Yeah.
So.
But. Yeah, all right, guys. Special shout out to all of our sponsors, W Energy, Fanatics, Duke Cannon, Bulletproof Coffee, Sleafs. What was that PC one? I always forget that one.
Century
Ryan.
PC up in the top corner there.
Century PC. Special shout out to all those sponsors. Be sure to check out our links in the podcast description. You can use SSPP10 on a few of them and get 10% off your order. But with that, I am Greg, Jamie, Tyler, Ryan, Valentino, Rumble. This has been the Lap Down, and we will see you guys post Richmond. Deuces.